Christian Britschke, we got the thumbs up, which means we're good to go. Patriots in charge again.
Finally.
Speaking of Patriots, I was getting drinks with my good friends, my buddies, Pete Hegseth and Marco Rubio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were just
shooting. My tormentors.
Your tormentors. Well, and it might get a little worse for you, unfortunately, because of a thing I said about you to them. I was trying to hype you up.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was the opposite of what we talked about. Low profile was the plan.
I just like you so goddamn much. No. I can't help but bring you up to my friends. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, son. No. We were talking about who should take over in Iran.
Mm.
And I thought, because you have such a good, done such a good job managing so many nonprofits,
mm-hmm.
maybe, you know, you would be a good player to take over. And so, but it's a crowded bar. It's very loud.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't hear very well. So I said, I ought to tell you, Christian is the right, but they thought I said Ayatollah Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think I gave them the impression that you are an austere religious scholar of an extremist version of radical Islam. And I'm worried that they are going to...
Yeah. Well, worry.
I hope that doesn't happen.
No, worry no more.
Okay.
So I was here burning, late last night, burning the midnight oil.
Yeah, the candle at both ends.
Yeah, not sanctioned midnight oil, mind you. And I get home to my house, and lo and behold, it has been destroyed.
Oh.
Exploded, yeah.
Well, so, that sucks.
Yeah, I'm probably not getting the security deposit back. And obviously,
you never do anyway.
No, of course. Yeah, no. So I guess that's less of a loss. I feel bad for my neighbors who are, you know, have been
incinerated.
Collateral damage, yeah.
We'll
add that to the victims of your many schemes.
We have incinerated a lot of people in Iran, and some of them was a school full of little girls, and that was really bad.
Very bad. And that's we did
totally
that.
Did
yeah.
it. Mm-hmm. I like how no one in the administration wanted to say that. They're like, well, we're just going to investigate a little, you know, real careful about this one.
Yeah.
You know, somebody...
they didn't want to call the...
Well, they were domestic terrorists.
Domestic terrorists.
Right.
Well, I guess they wouldn't be domestic terrorists, but yeah.
They're not, no, they were little girls. It's awful, and...
It's very bad.
You know, there are casualties, innocent casualties in war, but that can only happen so many times before, and we think that people are going to rise up and install a pro-American government.
Because we blew up a school.
It's not going to happen.
Of, yeah.
Frankly, I no longer think, so I do think the rationale for this war from the administration's perspective, what they're trying to accomplish has come into sharper focus this week. Because initially, because this was not voted on, it was suddenly launched, we started killing everyone in authority, it was unclear. And then, you know, you have the fact that people like Lindsey Graham have wanted to topple the Iranian regime.
Yep.
John McCain wanted to do this. This is pre-Trump. Republican leaders, neocon leaders,
obsession, yeah.
of destroying mm-hmm. the government of Iran. So you had that background of we're doing regime change.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, okay, but maybe we have to stop them from getting a nuke and the diplomacy wasn't going well. And Trump just likes to make a point. If negotiations aren't going well, okay, we'll blow you up and we'll try to negotiate better next time.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it about, so what is it about? So now I think... My understanding, I don't actually think, other than Lindsey Graham, who's not in the administration, they are actually thinking about changing this form of government
mm-hmm.
with another form of government. I don't think there's going to be ground troops is what that would be required for that. I don't think it's about that. I think it is about decimating the military capabilities of Iran, which are being decimated. We've blown up ships. We have crippled, for the time being, their ability to make war. Now, they already had no ability to make war on the U.S.
Right.
So on behalf of Israel, I mean, Israel, you know, took the lead on these strikes. We have made it impossible for them to, in any full-scale way, attack Israel.
That elementary school will be a threat to no one ever again.
Right, yes. And that's awful, very awful. But we're not trying to replace the regime, I don't think, with a pro-American. I mean, we might keep killing the person in charge until there's someone who's like a patsy who will be nominally against America, but
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, I guess that's, I think
like
that
Delcy Rodriguez in Venezuela, right?
Right.
Didn't that, I think that has demonstrated her rule was recognized by the State Department this week.
Yeah.
So that's my takeaway.
Well,
I think it's good. I think they're trying to do.
I guess, I mean, I think the strongest evidence that they are at least flirting with the idea of regime change is that they keep bumping off whoever ends up in charge, right? Mm-hmm. And so either they are curious about regime change, interested mm-hmm. in regime change curious, yeah. And therefore think that the way to do that is just keep killing off the top person until the government completely collapses and right. something else forms. Or the goal is just like a more transparent kind of joker foreign policy of like, we are better off if this country, the state just collapses. We don't mm-hmm. need to worry about replacing it with anything. And so therefore, if we just keep killing the top guys, then the government will, you know, maybe it'll collapse into, you know, regime hardliners controlling some portion of the country and mobs or criminals or rebels controlling some other part.
And that seems that's awful. Better. That seems like a failed state. Seems like that would be a very, very bad plan.
Well, that's
how you get ISIS in control of things.
Yeah, but
right?
this is general. I mean, if we are like, you know, we're doing this war in collaboration with Israel, and this is kind of, you know, at least yeah. like right-wing Israeli foreign policy has long been, we would like all our neighbors to be dysfunctional basket cases. Because we can keep right. the border, we can protect our own border. I guess, you know, October 7th kind of punctured a hole in that. But
right, October
so
7th is
as,
the great argument against that philosophy.
Yes, but I mean, clearly it still holds a lot of weight in that we would just much rather our neighbors be in chaos than be some sort of coherent state that yeah. might threaten us. That's why, you know, Israel hated Assad. Assad falls. They start bombing the next government too, right?
Right. They propped up, I mean, they being Netanyahu specifically, right?
Yeah.
Propped up Hamas to discredit the Palestinian Liberation mm-hmm. Authority, yeah. the more moderate force. See how that works out.
Right.
I mean, this is a bad and discredited idea. I mean, let's just call it what it is. This is right, a yeah. terrible, terrible policy.
Support your enemies so you don't have to make peace. Right.
It's yeah. very bad. So we don't want that.
Yeah, it is remarkable. I mean, here we are trying to like spitball what the purpose of this war even is.
This is why you vote on things.
This is why you vote on things, to have an understanding, to make, we're a republic, to make the case to the people
yes.
why you're doing something,
yes.
right? I mean, I think that's going to, if they do have wider aspirations here, I think that's going to come back to bite them, and that like, you didn't do the requisite propagandizing
right.
of the population. Now no one supports this. And so the second that there's consequences, which, you know, we're starting to see higher oil prices, you know, Pete Hegseth had a great line where he's like, you know, the Strait of Hormuz is open, but for the Iranians blowing up all the ships. It's like, oh, thank goodness. But like, once people start seeing consequences and no one has bothered to build a consensus behind this action, then people are going to turn against it very quickly. Right. Enough to like change your vote in one way or another. Maybe, maybe not. People generally.
I mean, wars don't get more popular over time.
No.
So whatever the level of support is for it now is just where it's going to be.
Right.
And it's going to erode. And it's the case that most of Trump's supporters are with him no matter what he does. They trust him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like the idea that it's hard to tell because, you know, the Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, that side of the MAGA commentary world is totally against this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on this issue. I'm more in line with them, frankly.
Yeah.
How much do they represent? And they have massive audiences, so you can't say they represent no one.
Yeah.
Clearly, the non-interventionism of Trump, no new wars, was part of the selling point to some of the voters to join him for the first time. So you can't say this is not, you know, spitting in the face of a certain segment of your voter. It just is.
Right.
Now,
right.
You can't give your voters everything they want every single time. Mm-hmm. This is going pretty far in the opposite direction from what we were promised.
Yeah.
And there's a huge danger in that. Like, there's not being as anti-interventionist as expected, which would always be the case because no president lives up to their lofty peace rhetoric, you know, constitutional scholar Barack Obama ends up, you know, the king of drone strikes,
right?
The architect of the Libya war,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton, the mother of ISIS,
yeah.
you know, this kind of thing.
Smart power,
yes,
right, yeah.
And you know, when they're running, it's all, you know, Ron Paul peace type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then they get into office, it's not that. So I expected the same from Trump, but there's that, and then there's just launching a war on Iran.
Yeah, this is a almost difference. It's such a difference in degree from his
right.
campaign promise that it becomes a difference in kind. Like even you look at the Libya, you know, so the Libya comparison I think is like pretty apt.
Right.
Barack Obama runs as the peace candidate,
right?
Even though if you parse the statements more closely, he was kind of like, oh, he's the smart moderate position of we're going to get out of Iraq and fight the Afghan war, Afghanistan
and they
gave war harder.
Him a Nobel Peace Prize
immediately
just for saying those
just
things.
For saying those
for
things.
Doing
right
nothing
right.
It's the most discrediting award of all time.
Yeah, Henry Kissinger.
Yes,
and, yeah.
He didn't even do anything.
Right. Yeah. 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 It was just the change in tone.
Right. So I mean, Donald Trump was like, "Where's my Nobel Peace Prize? I've said things."
Yeah.
I'm like,
right.
Yeah, I mean, you know
you
what?
Can, you
that's
can understand.
Fine.
Yeah. Derangement about particular Republican presidents did not start with Donald Trump.
Yes.
People forget how much everyone hated George Bush. Right?
Yes.
Rightfully so, for
yes.
many reasons.
Yes.
But anyway, my point being, Barack Obama runs as the peace candidate. Then he gets us involved in Libya, which was like this a giant bombing campaign to overthrow or to overthrow a government that was in the
did your
the throws
thing come
of
off
war.
Your
yeah yeah sorry I'm fiddling with my phone case
yeah,
because
it broke
a
off.
Little corner fell yeah. But I'm sorry I'm distracting you from the point that I'm making. But say what you will about Libya. Libya is a small country. When it comes to like our engagement, you know, our involvement there was relatively minor.
Yeah.
Like when it comes to like global oil supplies, relatively small. Like we, you know, our, you know, bombing campaign devastated the country and then it collapsed into civil war. This is all bad for the Libyans.
Right.
But going after Iran is
a
much bigger
country.
Undertaking. We've had to deploy how many of our military resources there, right? Like,
yeah.
This is a huge undertaking to try to take down this government of, if that is our goal, of 80 million people in a much more strategically vital area as well, given that they control part of the sea that, you know, so much of global
Iran is a real country.
It's a real country.
Yeah.
Libya, a much smaller country
yes.
that you can kind of knock around
yeah.
and not be so worried about your hypocrisy, right?
I mean, and everything is downstream a little bit of Libya because Libya, we screwed up with Libya so badly because Gaddafi was originally a anti-American extremist type
yeah.
person organizing.
Yeah. Very strange guy.
But we, odd dresser. And we dealt with him violently, previous administrations did. And then he got into shape a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then he adopted a more friendly to us mm-hmm. posture, and that was then we killed him, or we allowed him to be killed anyway.
Yeah.
And that was, I would argue, a mistake, because I think that sends a message to people like that well, you do need nukes because we're going to knock you off
mm-hmm.
even
mm-hmm.
if you start being nicer to us. We should it's the Tywin Lannister line from Game of Thrones: when your enemies defy you, you meet them with steel and fire. When they submit, you welcome them back into the fold. Or else no one will ever surrender peacefully,
right.
ever.
Yeah, just cost you more. Yeah. So, I mean, we've definitely made ourselves very untrustworthy negotiation partners. I mean, we went through this whole process with Iran, too.
Yeah.
Post-Libya, they were, you know, we had some deal to restrict their nuclear production. And, you know, Trump got rid of that.
Trump
in
said,
first term.
I can do better.
Yep. And got rid of that first
right.
term. Things
yeah.
stagnate. And then now it's like, oh, no, actually war, right? So if they're, that's the thing is like, if their goal is not regime change and they think that they're just going to stand up
yeah.
some sort of patsy, like even if you could get someone to claim, like, I am the leader of Iran and I will try to end this war with the United States, like what legitimacy are they going to have? I don't know, with the people there who are being bombed, or at least the regime
yeah.
who, you know, is eager to, you know, has hardline elements and now we're devastating their country. Like, are they going to let that person stay in power? They'll kill them themselves. Right.
But I also, though, just have trouble understanding from the game theory point of view
mm-hmm.
what whoever is in charge at any point in Iran is actually like. Do they think Trump is bluffing? Like, he will kill you.
Yeah.
He will just kill you over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he absolutely will. Look at what he just did.
Mm-hmm.
Look what he did to Maduro.
Mm-hmm.
He will come get you. There's not. We are the superpower. Like,
yeah.
there's not, and Trump is less beholden to norms. Like, I'd have to ask Congress to authorize this than anyone in history.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is their, like, when the negotiations wrapping up and it's clear they haven't made any progress and the Americans are pissed, the Ayatollah says, like, does he know that we're going to drop a bomb on him now? They're just fine with that? I don't know.
Yeah,
it seems weird
so
to me.
Part of this, I think, is like, you just haven't given, like, any leadership the opportunity to change their posture at all, right? Because we just keep killing them so rapidly.
Do what we want or die seems just like a very clear incredible threat of violence that I don't know, it does not motivating behavior.
Yeah, but the problem is, like, if that is an effective threat, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? Because on the one hand, you have the Americans who are fighting.
No, rocks over there.
Very good. Yeah. Well, the hard place is Afghanistan. Yeah. Iran is in the middle. very good. Yeah. But
I don't know. If it was me, I'd be like, well, this sucks. I don't want to give them, death to America. I hate them. I don't want to give those Israeli bastards what they want, but I'd also rather not be blown up.
Yeah, but then your own people will kill you. Your own regime that is in a state of crisis will just assassinate you instead, right?
But
that's what you're faced with.
Maybe, but like, this is the certainty of a bomb falling on my head. I'll take my chances with Trump.
You'll take your
big fucking mistake.
You'll take your chances that you can avoid the American bombs, I guess.
Those things are pretty precise.
The terrorists, terrorist groups, they did this for forever, right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess there was no chance of negotiation there. But that's the thing.
I don't have that dog in me. I'd be like, you know what? You win.
We keep killing these guys.
I'd rather not die.
Yeah, well, we're not leaders of an
austere
republic.
We're not austere religious leaders.
Yeah, I do have a little bit of... I confess I have a little bit of sympathy for the Islamic Republic. Not the kind of government I would want to live under by any means.
Not me at all.
Worse than the Shah, I think everybody would agree.
Oh, I'd bring back the Shah.
Yeah, in a minute. Yeah, his son's still hanging around. But, there is a thing where it's like, Islam is different from Christianity in that, the Quran, the text, it has, requirements for how your earthly state should be governed, right? Mm-hmm. And the Shah wasn't following those at all. Mm-hmm. So it's like a, religious country. Mm-hmm. I understand why they were kind of upset, being like, we're not really following the rules here, guys. We need something different. Yeah.
But have you seen all the pictures
they're taking it more seriously,
people wearing, women wearing bikinis in the streets.
And that's not allowed.
Well, yeah. Well, you're an austere religious scholar.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that, if you are going to be religious, you should take it seriously, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So
I would just not want to get blown up, but they have obviously taken a different strategy, but
different
strokes for different folks. What else we got? The housing stuff. You definitely want to get to this.
Bizarrely blown up. Speaking of things blowing up, I'm surprised to see this issue become very salient,
up your alley.
X. Yeah. So
Elizabeth Warren is evil.
Yeah,
but she's been good on your housing stuff a little bit, but now she's evil again.
The world makes sense because she was being good for a while, and then now she's gone back to being evil, as you say. And so I'm happy that she is the villain again. It always pisses you off when you you're in a book or a TV show, movie, the bad characters all of a sudden doing nice things. Mm-hmm. Gollum is Smeagol again.
Mm-hmm.
You feel this unease where you're like, well, I hated this character. Now
what?
I'm supposed to
taters,
like them.
Taters, precious.
Yeah, right. That's Elizabeth Warren for you. it's housing, precious. But so let me
lay it on us.
Sure.
Lay something.
So, as we've discussed previously on the program, there has been this big backlash, this bipartisan populist backlash to this idea that Wall Street is buying up all the homes, single family homes, turning them into rental housing, and therefore, you and me, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. America can't purchase a home and live out our American dream.
Just trying to have the American dream, normal, wholesome, just get a house for me and my twink, can't get it.
Yeah.
Because of these corporate mass purchases of land.
Yeah, ruining your gay perversion of the American dream. Yeah. So that's not quite true.
Not Iran.
Yes.
Say what you will about Iran, but...
Right. Blackstone is doing the exact same thing, basically, that's case has never really made sense, right? So big Wall Street investors did, for the first time ever after the Great Recession, when there was a huge amount of foreclosures and vacant homes and no one could get a mortgage, buy a bunch of single family homes, turn them into rentals. But then over the past decade, they've been selling off their portfolios. And they always owned a very small, tiny percentage of single family homes. Like the large investors owned less than 1%, or at least they own less than 1% today. During that time as well, there's been this other thing called build to rent housing, where basically, there's arguments for why this has become a new feature in the market, but investor will build out a single family subdivision, normal kind of homes that you see every day, except they're rental homes. Instead of selling them off to individual buyers with a mortgage, you just rent them out to people, right, who can't or don't want a mortgage.
Sure.
Okay, so that's kind of what's been happening in the market. The investors buying existing homes, that's been declining. Build to rent, that's been on the upswing, right? And the panic about investors buying homes has also been on the upswing,
yes,
despite it declining, you know, over the past few years.
It's a major lefty panic thing. I always hear lefty people saying you can't buy houses because of BlackRock or whatever.
It's a Blackstone.
Blackstone.
People make this mistake. Mm. I made this mistake, but it's Blackstone, not BlackRock.
Got
both investors.
Oh, you lured me into that trap, didn't you?
Yeah, you gotcha. Idiot. No, I'm just kidding. But it's a big thing on the left. It's also become a cause on the populist right. You go back to a 2024 VP debate. One of the few things Tim Walz and J.D. Vance could agree on was that Wall Street shouldn't be buying up all the homes. Trump had an executive order about it. He mentioned it in his State of the Union speech, called on Congress to ban this practice that's already declining, on and on and on, right? So that's the one development. Then the other timeline is Congress, for the past year and change, has been quietly, you know, to the degree that no one really cares, tootling away on actually kind of not so bad bill. Reform bill. Yeah. It's the Congress that you hear about but have never actually seen, right?
Wow.
They're getting together, you know, started in the Senate Banking Committee, Tim Scott, Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren, allegedly, you know, she's wanted to spend $5 trillion on affordable housing for a long time. She knows that's not going to happen in a Republican administration, in a Republican-controlled Senate. So she says, okay, what can we do? Goes to Tim Scott, and they start cobbling together a bill of, you know, small tweaks and regulatory reforms, many of which are deregulatory, most of which are things that we actually, you know, as libertarians, like, would kind of like. You know, it's not a pure libertopia, but it's like, hey, this grant program that just gives money to places that don't build anything, what if we tweak it so that it sends some money to places that do build things instead?
So okay, it's not so legalized heroin, but it's maybe you won't get arrested for a week.
Yeah, there we go. Very good. Yeah. Not legalized heroin, but let the OxyContin be a little stronger.
Okay,
you know?
That's good. That's mm-hmm. good. I got back pain.
Okay. No longer, sir.
Yeah.
So that bill gets cobbled together, passes the Senate last year.
Whoosh.
The House doesn't pass it. But the House, they're working on their own pretty similar bill, right? A bunch of other little wonky fixes that they put together. That passes the House in February, 390-9. A standalone bill. That never happens. Everything gets shoved into some big budget bill, right?
Just number gets two, crammed in
yeah.
there.
Number two, wow. Big bipartisan vote, you know? That's strange, you know? You never see that anymore. So it's like, okay, wow, Congress is kind of putting together these little fixes.
Waiting for the punchline.
And then, of course, there's the looming populist moral panic about institutional buyers. So Trump told Congress to, you know, pass a bill that includes this ban on investors buying single-family homes. And so the Senate, you know, bill comes over from the House. They put in a bunch of their changes. And to make sure it passes quickly in the House, we're like, oh, we'll put in this thing that Trump wants, which includes the ban on the investors. It also includes an effective ban on these build-to-rent communities, which is – so this bill that was
right,
going
after
to –
Right, 7 years they have to sell them, right?
Yes, yeah. Forced divestiture. Technically 10 because you can like –
But you don't make your money back in that. Nobody's going to
– No, and the people who are investing in these communities are kind of like buy-and-hold investors too, pension funds and the like. So the idea that you – yes, you're not going to make your money back. The people who are financing it, it's not an attractive like short-term investment. And so you just like – you wouldn't –
Right.
Do it. And so, and this is not an insignificant amount of new housing each year. It's, you know, the estimates vary, but it's between maybe like 3% and 10% of new single family homes are now these build to rent developments. And so you've gone from having this bill that was supposed to be like a marginal improvement on pushing out housing supply to be a big reduction in the amount of new homes being built. And there's all sorts of estimates about whether this is going to be, you know, how much of a net decline this would be, but it's not good. And it's completely devastated the intent of this bill. And yeah, so.
I mean, people, this is like one of those cases where like small is not always better than big.
Yep.
Like people complain about landlords and, you know, if you live in cities, landlords vary in quality greatly.
Yes.
It seems to me and you can get a good landlord who just, you know, owns one little apartment mm-hmm. building with like six units or something, and you get a terrible one mm-hmm. in those circumstances. You're more likely, I think, to get a bad one if it's just one little apartment building, being owned by six. Like, the idea that we must stop some large moneyed interest from having units that they rent to people doesn't seem to, like, if we had to do it, we don't want, there's no reason for the government to prefer one kind to the other, but you wouldn't necessarily prefer, from a policy standpoint, a situation where the only people who can be landlords are people who just own a unit or two and
yeah, absolutely, because there's
rent it out.
Yeah,
I mean, I live in a, you know, a giant apartment building that is owned by some kind of conglomerate and is run by a management company, and the service is exceptional, basically, and that tends to be the modal experience for people in, you know, who live in a large managed building in DC.
It's nice. Yeah, professional management is nice. That's what large institutional landlords offer, is professionalized management.
Right.
Versus the you know,
will you fix the sink? Oh, yeah. Next week I fix sink.
And you know, I've had a range of landlords myself.
Right, because you always live in weird little golem caves.
That's right. Yeah, some of them have been above ground, but eagles nests and the like. But Lord of the Rings reference, not a Hitler reference. But
oh God,
yeah, I couldn't afford an eagle's nest like that.
Yeah.
What a commodious dwelling that was. But no, so like, there's high variability because they're just like people, you know, random small proprietors doing a business. So like, sometimes you get the benevolent slumlord that doesn't really fix anything, but also like leaves you alone, right?
Right. Forgets to collect rent.
Yeah, right. Yeah, totally. Or like, is charging massively below market rents for this property that they've owned forever, right? Sometimes you get like someone who actually is kind of like on top of fixing things, but is just like so anal about like, well, did you take your shoes off when you entered the, you know?
Yeah.
You get that kind of landlord. Then you get
an Asian one.
Yeah. Okay. you can get you know, everything in between, sinners and saints, you know.
It's a big, crooks. Wide world.
Yeah. It's a big, wide world. But professionalized management adds a little bit of sanity to it. Yeah. And also, I mean, there's kind of an economic argument for this, too, which is that renting out homes at scale is something that, like, shouldn't really work unless you have some sorts of economy of scale efficiency that you can add, right? Whether, you know, through management software, or maybe you can, you know, as a larger institution, you can get better financing, which would, you know, maybe lower the rents or something like that. But yeah, I mean, and this is why also why institutional investors generally don't outbid individual homeowners for homes, because like the most rational thing is for a, like economically is for a, the owner to live in a home that they own, right? Because this is a concept that's hard to wrap your head around, but like in that case, you're paying rent to yourself effectively. You're always going to have to pay someone to own housing, to live somewhere, right? You might as well pay yourself. And also it resolves like this principal agent problem of like, do I want a nicer oven or not? Well, I don't know. How much does it cost, right? Versus you arguing with the landlord about, will you fix this or not? And they have to decide when they're going to do it, whether they want to, all this kind of stuff, right? So there's lots of good reasons why you would want institutional investors to own single family homes if it makes economic sense to them. It's made less and less economic sense to them lately. So they've been selling off their portfolios, but that has nevertheless kicked off this giant moral panic backlash that has destroyed another type of housing that no one else really had a problem with until yesterday. And it's very frustrating to watch. I always forget how, when the conversation is about civil liberties, I look very more warmly and favorably on the like intercept Bernie Sanders left. I'm like, oh, there's a lot of agreement between us. But then when the conversation turns back to economics, I remember how completely stupid they are about everything. So I've been very frustrated with your sometime collaborator, Ryan Grimm's tweeting on this. Yeah, he's tried to make the point where it's like, well, everyone told me institutional investors were not a big deal, or private equity, as he likes to call them. That sounds a little scarier. But now you're telling me it's a huge disaster if you pass a, you know, restriction on build to rent. It's like, okay, so firstly, yes, institutional investors, small part of the market. So when you say they're buying up all the homes, I'm just factually rebutting you by saying they're not a big part of the market. It makes sense that you would maybe be upset if your housing supply bill destroys 10% of new single family homes built each year, right? Both those things can be true. It's not some ridiculous contradiction. So,
well, and this is one of those left-right alliance things, though, because
in a bad way. Yeah, yes, we had a good horseshoe. We had a good horseshoe because no one understood or cared about the bill at all.
The populace,
and then the people. This is the other way the Intercept people are stupid: is they truly don't believe. Like, progressives have this weird dilemma that they have to resolve in their own head, which is, I want the government to do a lot of things because that'll be a benefit for the people, but the government is doing a lot of things I don't like. And that is not benefiting the people. How do I explain this, given that we live in a democracy? It's like, oh, it's because all these shadowy interests are actually getting the
policy. It's all money motivated.
Everything
is because, like, our foreign policy is totally governed by, like, do you buy this? I mean, I know that lobbyists make a difference and they influence people and people's personal financial incentives matters. But, like, you can't convince me this attack on Iran, for instance, that we've just done is so Raytheon can make more money.
No.
Trump is ideologically bought into it.
No. And I don't think there's any real, like, crony interest in banning the build to rent housing either. Like, there's some, like, the realtors have been kind of shameless about, like, oh yeah, sure, we totally support this bill with the build to rent ban in it, but, like, they weren't pushing for that, right? There's no crony interest here. It's just, like, populism is a real thing, and people, the populace, can get policy wrong, and they have on this very particular issue. And so now, yeah, it's been funny to watch this effort.
Like, I'm going to take that away from you.
Okay, I'm putting it away. Wow, this really bothers you.
It does bother me.
It's been funny to watch this, just like this push for more, like, wonky housing bill that will maybe, like, build a few more homes, just completely collapse in real time right at the finish line.
Sucks.
And it's possible the House will just, like, not pass it, or maybe it'll get amended there. So, I mean, there's still a lot of activity, and we'll see. But, you know, so maybe Congress will default to its natural state of not passing anything.
And it sucks because some of these on the right, these kinds of national conservative populist type people are always like, let's build things in America again. You know, let's reindustrialize.
This is the one thing you have to build,
like,
in America.
We can't. We're never going to build things in America with the economic policies of the left.
Yeah.
And you know, they're always making common cause on these things now. And I'm like, this is just a recipe to put America further behind. Mm-hmm. Because if you really want to build things here, we know what we got to do. You're not going to be willing to do it, but environmental regulation, gutted. Labor regulation, gutted. Immigrant labor, welcomed. All of those, that's how we can build things. Mm-hmm. So, but they don't want to do any of that because it hurts their feelings or whatever.
Yeah.
So, okay, then we're just going to outsource it. Yeah. We'll just build it elsewhere.
Yeah. The one I've been happy to see, there is, yeah, it's kind of like, it is an interesting issue in that there's, like, horseshoes on both sides, right?
Yeah.
So, like, the right and left that get it, you know, like, I had some tweet about it, and everyone from, you know, Matt Yglesias to Bonshi on Twitter retweeted it.
Yeah.
Not normally people on the same side of things,
yeah,
but they're on the correct side, right?
Right.
But then on the flip side, you have Elizabeth Warren and Tom Cotton, right?
Yeah.
So there's an interesting horseshoe here. Although, you know, something that has been bothering me from the people who are against the build to rent restrictions is they have, they're really retailing hard the term slopulism.
Talk to me about slopulism.
So
I like the term.
I hate
slop.
It.
The term slop is taking over, and this term slop has won for the same reason that the term woke won. Woke beat out political correctness, intersectionality, and a dozen other things to describe something we all know what we're talking about because it is four letters long and one syllable and very easy to say. And that's why slop has also won.
Yeah. So I understand why it's won, but I don't like that result. So woke was a little more helpful because there was it fused together a lot of related concepts and just kind of attitudes in the discourse, right?
Do you think slop's doing that?
No, because I thought slop had a useful particular meaning and has now just kind of come to refer to just mean bad, right? It's been the term slop was good and then has now been degraded by its overuse.
I don't agree. I don't think it just means bad. I think it means bad and also like very audience pleasing, very designed to please a specific audience, but of low quality. The way like pig slop or something. Like the pigs love it. They're going, you know, they don't care that it's garbage or whatever.
yeah.
I think that's what we're going for with sloth.
That's I guess that's
like, here's this image of, wasn't America so nice in the 1950s? You're consuming this.
Yeah,
you
but like
right wing Twitter people.
But people don't like slop, right? Like, that's why the word is so evocative, is because you don't like the term, right?
Well, you
so
don't
it's like,
realize the pig call... doesn't realize it's slop. I think that's the point.
No, the pigs like slop.
They like
we
slop.
Are, we as humans,
and we
are,
and we're standing outside, recoiling in horror at them consuming this.
No, something like, maybe to call it like crack or catnip or something like that would make more sense, because it's like something that's addictive and attractive, even though we know it's fundamentally bad, right? That would, yeah. I think that would make more intellectual sense. And see, the reason I liked slop,
I think this is lazy, is a component of it.
Yeah,
like
sure. It's
where maybe a dick crack or addictive could be something more thoughtfully designed to hook you.
You got to actually like make the rock, boil the rocks or
right.
however crack works.
Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess that's fair. I just like, I thought it had a very good use when it was applied to AI, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is that. Whether you agree or not with like the kind of theme of this critique, it was AI is taking images and words that people made, grinding it up and synthesizing it into some, you know, AI produced product.
Right.
And so that is the slop coming out of AI, right?
Nostalgia porn, a lot of it.
Yeah, sure.
Like
or
the...
just like. Or stupid ChatGPT, you know, copy or whatever else, right? Is like you're taking actual words written by humans and grinding it up into a lesser version of the whole, right? And so like that's like how you actually make slop in the real world, right? But now it's just become this larger generic term, and I don't really like that so
the
much. And I just feel like it's overused.
The AI, that's on my list. Did you take that New York Times AI writing quiz thing?
The AI fooled me a lot.
Did it?
I got the Blood Meridian. Well, explain what the quiz is.
So it was this New York Times thing where they had five actual passages from literature, from fiction. And one was a poem. One was from Blood Meridian, which we've all read recently. And then they had AI make a similar thing, and like, which do you prefer? Could you tell which was which? And B, which do you like better? I got a 3 out of 5. I preferred the human one. I prefer the human one.
Yeah.
The goal was
I was trying to guess the human one.
You're
right,
trying to
right.
effectively guess the human one. I got it 3 times out of 5.
Yeah.
Although one of those was the passage from Blood Meridian that I recognized.
Right.
So I knew that was the human one.
Right.
And it's funny, the guy who put it to it's Kevin Roos at the New York Times is a little bit of an anti, like a anti-tech,
he's very anti-tech, yeah,
extremely anti-tech, and so he was almost like his headline was, oh my god, like 54% of people prefer the AI one, literature's over, this is the end of the world. But then like what the New York Times says to you, even if you do it correctly, is they're like, oh, so you're one of those people who prefer human stuff, well, you must be a really good guesser then. Like, fuck you, man. one I got wrong, the poem was hard to, I got that one wrong. That one was very hard to distinguish. But,
yeah, I got the poem wrong. I got the Ursula Le Guin, the fantasy one.
Oh, I got
one
that
wrong.
One right.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
I think maybe I was 3 out of 5 or maybe I was 2 out of 5.
I mean,
I don't
look,
know.
They were similar-ish.
They were similar.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Although the Blood Meridian one, like you, I think even if you didn't know it was Blood Meridian, it's just such.
The judge.
It's written in a way that an AI wouldn't do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
As we talked about on the pod before, like, I think AI will be a good generator of paint-by-numbers genre fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like...
But it won't make you feel anything.
No, it won't make you feel anything. And that's what it was able to do on a paragraph level. I don't know. It's like, you kind of have to read paragraphs in connection to other things, right? Like literature, like a book is a book for a reason,
right?
Something that sounds maybe stupid, it makes a lot more sense as part of a coherent whole. Something that sounds profound might be revealed as shallow when it's just taken, you know, it's isolated from the context around it.
Right. It was another one of those, I don't know what this proves.
Yeah,
kind
right.
of things.
What is the point here?
Congratulations.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like you could do that with any sort of writing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
People
also, you want to read,
it's like
you want to read Ursula K. Le Guin's writing because it's her.
Yeah.
Like just something imitating her that wasn't actually written by her.
Yeah.
I have less innate interest in.
Yeah.
Because I want her thoughts and ideas, not something in the style of her, not something mimicking her, if it's not her.
You know what? And I can still remember a line from that quiz, even though I hadn't read the underlying source material there. I don't remember the AI line, right. But her paragraph had, what was it? It was like, a lit candle always casts a shadow.
Yeah, it was pretty.
That's good. That's good. And maybe an AI could come up with something like that, something similar, but is it going to generate some very inventive
Maybe it could. And maybe
plots?
And maybe it could trick me. Who knows? But but I'd want to know, you know, we're not going to use, fraud is still illegal, so we're not like, it can't, the AI can't publish its own book and claim that it's Ursula K. Le Guin because it's going to get sued.
Yeah.
So as long as we still have at least somewhat enforced copyright type protections or trademarks, which I think we should, given what's about to happen, then you can't, you know, you can't just rip people off.
Yeah, my prediction for this, Tyler Cowen has this formulation. I can't remember if it's original to him or I just heard it from him first. And Tyler Cowen is someone who's all in on AI now to a kind of ridiculous degree, I think.
Yeah.
But he talks about technological changes as, is it a hammer or a microphone, right? A hammer being, it just kind of like allows everyone to be more productive versus a microphone, which is it elevates some small section of people with exceptional talents to the detriment of more middling performers, right? And I think AI in the arts is going to be a lot like that, right?
There's going to be a lot. Hammer, it would allow us to beat our faces to be more looks maxed.
Slop!
Right?
Right. Like, oh, that's right. Looks
maxing.
Right. Clavicular.
Yeah. Clitvacular.
That's his. It's a rather disgusting vampiric collaborator. Yeah, forgot all about that guy. I was so happy until he brought him up again.
He had 1 week of major.
Well, he went out with the Nazis, and then he had a brief.
But he's not really Nazi or interested in ideas whatsoever, which I find kind of amusing, frankly.
Right?
Because people they keep trying to like project onto him something deeper or something meaningful or claim him as one of this community or that. And every time he opens his mouth, it's just all I care about is prettiness. Who is the most pretty? That's the one I support. I support the pretty one. Right. I don't care about any ideas. I don't believe in anything. I am just it's just literally Narcissus staring at itself in the water. That's it.
A true representation of our times, though, maybe.
Yeah.
I guess people they're demanding he do the normal ape to man influencer trajectory of like, oh, now you're a thought leader, right?
Right. It actually kind of reminded me of the movie Joker, whereas they keep trying to put some ideology on his behavior. I'm just a crazy person.
I'm mentally ill.
I'm mentally ill. I'm hurting people because I'm angry. And there's nothing. Stop trying to overcomplicate it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a wholesome simplicity in his, his complete shallow narcissism.
I am bad. And that's it. That's nothing deeper here.
No, not everyone has to be some sort of thoughtful anti-hero. Right. Yeah.
We always want answers. We always want it to be part of some comprehensive and well thought out ideology. I mean, this is how we care about our mass shooters or our psychotic violent people. We're always like, oh, well, let's read their diary. Let's really understand the exact confluence of factors and happenings and beliefs. Was he watching conservative news? Was he in touch with the manosphere, or was he in chat rooms with Islamists? Was he were his parents together? Were they were you're trying to understand something that is, in so many of these cases, just seems like
irrational.
Like that is a human desire to find narrative satisfaction in the events as they take place.
To impress order on chaos,
It's just when it's just chaos, when it's just there's nothing to it. A crazy person, it's internal brain damage or something on a level we can't understand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of brain damaged people, the British have done something unconscionable.
Yeah.
Did you hear about this?
Was this the fact that our kitchen here ran out of coffee, so we had to drink tea yesterday? Is that what we're going to talk about?
Well, you did. I refused to drink tea. So I had this like caramel toffee, one of those holiday ones that are left over. I don't like hazelnut even at all. I hate the word hazelnut. If you want me to like not go in a room, just put a flyer on it that says hazelnut. I don't like the taste of hazelnut. I like caramel, but not in coffee. I just want normal just nice, stupid, bitter, regular black coffee. So I brought in my own. You brought me an energy drink.
I did, but it had to. I tried to buy two non-sugar ones, but I accidentally bought a one with the sugar and one without. And
we're heading towards Speedo season, and you wanted me to have 200 calories of sugar. So
can't be
not,
done.
We're not doing that.
My apologies.
I brought my own coffee.
I'm trying to kneecap the competition here when we hit the beaches together.
So. I see. You don't have to swim faster than the shark, just faster than the guy next to you, right? That's your theory.
Yeah.
I hate tea, actually. I don't like tea at all. I will not drink it.
I drink a sleepy time tea. It's wind down. I like some sleepy
time tea.
Yeah.
Do you mean alcohol?
No. If only. No, I'm drinking melatonin tea in the evenings.
Interesting. I'm just having melatonin gummies. I take melatonin gummies to fall asleep.
I eat too many of the gummies when I have the gummies.
They are good.
I'm just like some very sleepy gummy bears. You know? Oh, I gotta get another one.
Okay. Anyway, the British.
The British.
The
British are coming.
Are taking Winston Churchill off their currency.
Right. Yeah. Monster Winston Churchill, who saved that ungrateful little island for no reason, apparently.
I wish he hadn't. And some other people. Who's the gay coding guy? Alan Turing.
Alan Turing. They're taking him off the currency?
They're taking all people off the currency.
All human beings.
Right. So the next currencies will be animals, like owls and things, because they're such nature lovers in England. So here's the problem with it. So it's not ostensibly being done. They didn't say we're doing this for PC reasons, but you just know it's being done for PC reasons.
Yeah.
Winston Churchill said a bad word once or something.
Is Charles not going to be on the currency either?
Just Charles.
Just Charles. Just the monarch. Okay.
Jane Austen's coming off.
Wow.
Yeah, and I don't like this trend at all because, and here's the animals thing is very telling.
Mm-hmm.
I have a theory.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Robbie theory of animals. Mm-hmm. Animals are the end. Once you start making politically correct considerations and start doing, oh, well, we can't call them the Redskins anymore. We can't. Once you do any of that, your end state is animals.
Yeah.
Animals will be the last acceptable theme because animals can be different and have characteristics and it doesn't offend anyone because the animals don't get offended. Mm. So that's, you'll just end up with all sports teams will be animals. Mm. All games will be animal themed. You want to have a Japanese influenced expansion to your board game. No, it's just going to be animals.
Mm-hmm.
Animals is where it goes. And that's going to be boring and creatively bankrupt.
Yeah.
I mean, I like animals just fine. Some things can be animals themed, but all things will eventually be animals themed. If we allow this to go on.
So what are we...
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. Or, well, animals, or I guess it becomes... And maybe
colors.
this is an intermediary step, but just becomes like corporate vacuousness. Like,
right.
You know, we went from the Redskins to the Commanders. That's
I mean, in between we were just the Washington football team.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a problem with...
Exactly.
It's the Greendale human beings.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
So what do we...
An example of... And the Commanders is a fine name, by the way. I don't have a problem with it. I kind of like it. But that's
less
kind of...
less distinctive.
It's a little less distinctive, yeah.
Well, less racist, maybe.
Yeah.
Wait till you hear
the Redskins is racist? Is the Vikings racist?
Yeah.
Those are people with attributes. I don't...
Yeah. Till you hear what some Commanders did in history.
Well,
right?
and
explain what we're losing.
D&D is going through this too.
Yeah.
By the way, something we play, because you know they have elves and dwarves and orcs and everything, and some of the fun of it. So you have defined we all know what are the attributes of elves and dwarves from Tolkien's Legendarium and on, is that dwarves are miners that live in the earth, and elves are these kind of ethereal, tall, beautiful, semi-immortal beings that.
Mm-hmm.
Are very powerful and obviously you can derivate from this. You can put your own spin. And orcs are these warlike things that are evil.
Yeah.
But in my D&D adventures, which we play, I have a lot of reformed orcs who run like a little hotel service, and that is funny and narratively engage. It's a concept to engage with, but it only works because the orcs do have you can do something that it cuts against the stereotype in a very interesting way, but there has to be something to do that, right?
Yeah.
So, because D&D was like, oh no, this is too offensive to orcs. So now, orcs just, you know, used to be pages about all the wars they fought and all the atrocities that they've done. Mm-hmm. So then again, it's funny when there's a nice orc.
Right.
But now it's just orcs like to travel.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah, it's sterile. Yeah, yes. There's no flesh and blood here anymore.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Corporate, like you said.
Yeah,
we're totally. Losing something. Mm-hmm. So I don't like it. I don't want to just birds on the currency.
No, yeah, we're a nation of human beings.
Right,
right, yeah.
Right. And Winston Churchill is a great human being for the British, a hero. You know, despite what that person on Tucker Carlson's podcast said.
Right.
You know, we should have the founding fathers on our currency. Mm-hmm. I'm really bad at that game whenever that comes up as a trivia question. Hmm. Like, who's actually the person on the dime? I have no idea.
Oh, are you serious?
I just don't remember which ones are which.
FDR. Yeah. On the dime. Well, yeah, well, let's take him off the dime. Yeah.
Yeah, he's got to go.
Yeah, but, he was.
Well, no, I know Lincoln and Washington. I know which ones are the ones on the currency. I just in my head don't know.
Yeah.
Or when it comes up, which way they're facing on the, have you ever seen that one?
I don't think I would be able to do that.
That's tough. I saw that once as a question on, I think on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah.
Like which of these people is facing to the left versus the others. And I was like, oh,
that's real tough.
That's a rough one.
Well, it's tough because we don't, you know, we use cash so much less than we used to.
That's
true.
Know?
Yeah.
Cards.
So you think we're using it less, it should be less offensive, yeah. Right? We could spend more time having much more ornate currency, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, it's because it's like, it's not, you know.
Oh, because it's have for to, ceremony.
Yeah, we don't have to like keep pumping them out on like a, you know, industrial size scale, nearly as much. Mm-hmm. So we could maybe spend a little extra time making cash and coins kind of nicer and more fun. Yeah, right. Australia did this, which I kind of liked, was they had the you know, the sovereign on the bills, or at least the coins. But they were just much more willing to experiment with coin designs, and the bills were like this kind of like plastic you couldn't rip. They were all different colors too. I mean, I kind of like the uniform green, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. I guess that's all going on. I mean, we're keeping the dead male presidents for a little bit. This is the benefit of the American culture war, right? I feel like a lot of these other countries just kind of like accept the, you know, like. Whether it's just like making everything sterile or woke or whatever, they just bend into it, right?
Well,
whereas we fight about everything.
We went through a massive we're living through the massive backlash to wokeness, right?
Yeah.
They overreached in the 2014 to 2019, 2020, 2021, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
The backlash is now itself irritating, but
Yeah, we got to take FDR off the dime because he didn't own slaves.
Basically, that's basically what it's come to, and that can be just a little exhausting to be in outrage mode one way or the other every time, no matter what. But what do we even use? I mean, I carry cash just because I don't know. What do you use it for? Oh, to tip prostitutes, probably.
Yeah, they still Venmo still works for that.
Yeah, okay. The drug dealers,
right?
You can
the drug
Venmo,
dealers,
you
can need
Venmo
them. Well, the drug dealers, yeah, you still need to use the cash, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, no. What do I use cash for? I never. When I get a haircut, I have to get cash out to tip the. And technically, they do have at the place I go, they have a sheet of like Venmo QR codes, and you just like scan the one for the person who cut your hair. But I watched in horror once where a guy he accidentally tipped the wrong.
Hair,
and so then it became like a whole thing
ordeal.
Where like she's got to call the person who got the tip. I'm like, I don't want to be in this position, so I'll just go get some cash.
Do you remember when you used to like pay for, like, if you went to the restaurant, you'd pay with cash? Did you ever do that?
Yeah, sure.
I used to do that.
No longer. Even at the
I used to sit on, this is insane to me, you know, do you carry a wallet?
I do, yeah, I do carry a
in
wallet.
Your back pocket?
Yeah.
You're sitting on it now? Isn't that uncomfortable?
I must have left it on my desk.
No.
Yeah. Wait, do you have my wallet? No.
You do have some cash here. No, I used to sit on this fat wallet with all this cash in it. It was so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I don't carry a wallet anymore?
No. No, I like a little bit of redundancy where it's like, I don't want to, if I lose my phone and my wallet at the same time, I don't want that. And then also, you know, if I go like work out, I don't want like my cards with me, you know?
I have my phone case that the phone's in has a where I can actually I can stuff a little bit of cash in there, like just like $20, and then my credit cards. And I just have that with me always.
Maybe I'll make the switch, but I like having an extra wallet. Yeah, you know, even the church collection plate. You know, everyone you just Venmo now. You don't even use a
even the church
cash.
Collection plate.
I mean, they still send one around, so sometimes people have cash. But
I remember, you know, I grew up. I went to Catholic school. I was raised Catholic, and there was they initiated a Faith Direct. Then when the collection, so that's already coming out of your. Paycheck, or your my family, because I'm a kid, and so in the collection, but they would give you little pieces of paper that says like I support the, then you would put that in the collection bowl, so that that's nobody around is looking at like, oh, why aren't they chipping in?
No,
I have Faith Direct.
It's a little, I liked it. Yeah, okay.
Because you don't want to be judged by the people sitting around you.
Yeah, but you also shouldn't be judging people based on what they put in the plate. Yeah,
well, that's what they say.
All right, different strokes.
All right, we've got some other stuff. You wanted to talk about superpowers that would be helpful when moving.
Right.
That's a pretty specific one.
Well, Christian,
did you help someone move?
I did help someone move. I helped our former colleague now, Justin, move apartments. Cody, our producer, he was there. He was helping move, too.
I provided moral support from a distance.
Did you?
Yeah.
It wasn't felt on the ground, let me tell you. We were in the process of moving, and while moving, some Bane impressions might have come out, you know.
Stop that.
We've been doing so good so many weeks, but I'm gonna ruin it right now. Yeah, you know. We had our friend, colleague Jacob, you know,
a very Bane-like individual.
Yes,
a giant man,
Bane-sized man. Very good person to have helping you move, lifting up this giant set of drawers. And I was like, those are pretty big. He's like, for you.
Yes.
And then this spawned. You know, if I drop this box on your foot, will you die?
You fucked it up.
No,
it'll be
very painful. You merely rented the U-Haul. I was born in one.
Yes. God.
They expect one of us the loading dock, brother.
That's so good.
But in all these laughs,
the calendar.
Back to zero. But. I started to think, like, what would actually be, speaking of superheroes and moving, what would actually be, like, the most useful superpower?
Strength, right?
No, because I don't think so. Because...
I'll shut my damn mouth, then.
Do you even know what you're talking about? Yeah. So I could see that being useful for some things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Someone has a grand piano they have to move, or a chest of solid wood.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice if a strong person could lift it up all by themselves. But that still leaves you... having to move, you know, individual items. You're going to be constrained by stairwells and elevators if you're moving in apartments.
Teleport objects?
So teleport would be really good, depending on how much you could do all at once, right?
Right.
So I guess Dr. X, he's a
Xavier?
Telekinesis? Yeah. Yeah.
Professor
yeah.
X, you mean.
Yeah, Professor X, sorry.
Xavier.
He didn't get his PhD? That's sad.
He can, well.
The guy can read minds?
Teleport? I don't think he can teleport.
What's he able to do then?
He has vast psychic powers.
Okay.
He can freeze everyone.
Mm-hmm.
He can control your mind. He can make you do things.
Yeah.
He has incredibly advanced psychic powers. But I'm not even sure he moves, because Jean Grey can move things with her mind. She can do like everything.
Okay. So that would I think.
I'm not sure she could make a chair vanish and then appear somewhere. She could disintegrate a chair.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
That's helpful. Don't ask her to help you move. Yeah.
No.
Can I destroy all your stuff for you? Then if it's all dust, then it's easier to move, right? Yeah, I mean, if you could manipulate objects and elevate objects.
I mean, pure teleportation is a more out there power than people kind of think about, right? Like,
why?
Just moving things is not... But to make something... Well, I guess it depends on what kind of way you're. If you're doing it in a Dune fold space type way, you move the universe and now it's there.
Yeah,
I guess. But if it's like you're making all your atoms combust, disappear, and then rearrange themselves into you or into the object,
yeah,
is kind of not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, really, I guess, if you did that, you just wouldn't be alive after you redid it.
But then also, there'd be no need to really have possessions because you would just, like, create them on the fly, right?
Right. If you can just manifest, then it's like Harry Potter. Although in Harry Potter, I'm not sure they can create new matter. They can transfigure.
There's a bunch of helpful plot-saving rules for right. Like, what's
because they can't just make – the Weasley family can't just – make more money. They don't have money, but they can't just.
Right.
Can they turn leaves into money?
Why couldn't you turn objects into things that would make you more money? Right. Like, it doesn't make sense that there would be
property. Or the things you would use money to buy, you could just turn the leaves into.
I think we'd both agree the Harry Potter world is a little under-theorized, right?
Yeah. You have to kind of assume there's like a magic meter, like in. Like in a video game where like you get tired and you have to wait to use more magic, or you have to refill your MP or something, or else I don't know why they're not just.
I don't want to rag on it too hard because people make this point all the time. Yeah, it's a delight. It's a delightful story. A lot of great books, but people make this point all the time where it's like. Clearly, so many of the rules are just kind of like backfilled to explain away plot holes, or just like a lot of it doesn't really make much sense.
Right. The bad guys fight with the killing spell.
But the good
the
guys
good people can't use
that.
The killing spell, but they can use a spell that blows you up. Like, there's the reducto to just blow things up. They can use that, but they just can't use the literal killing spell.
Right. Or also, why don't just use a gun? Just shoot them.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But, okay, regardless, we're getting off track. We're very much more serious topic. Strength, I think, it's not a terrible one, but I don't think it would actually save you that much time, right? Two people being able, if you have two people lifting something, that's probably almost as good as someone, given how heavy furniture is, someone who can just lift the couch by themselves, right? Teleportation.
Like
okay. Oh boy. Yeah. Good thing you didn't drink that, sugar Red Bull.
Yeah.
You'd
be the Delilah to my Samson. You fucking bitch.
Yeah. Hey, I'm the one with the long hair here.
Yeah.
Teleportation, that would obviously be very helpful. I was thinking speed, right? Because you would, you could move every object, you'd just be able to go so much faster, and so the moving process would take much less long. Mm-hmm. That, or I was thinking also invisibility.
Mm.
Because when someone asks, tries to get you to help them move, you're gone. No, or also you could just live in other people's homes. You wouldn't need to own anything because you would just be invisible.
Invisibility. So, it's so creepy. Mm-hmm. The movies, there's that Invisible Man movie. Creepy.
Mm.
Did you ever see that one where he becomes a serial killer? Kevin Bacon is the invisible guy in it. I saw it as a kid. It scared me. Well, but he can only be invisible, so he becomes horrified.
So how do you know? Yeah, why would you even spend the money on the actor?
Well, then he's wearing he wants to be seen, but he can't be seen, and it's
tough.
Yeah,
they never really use the they use the invisibility cloak for like childlike mischief in Harry Potter. But it's never used. It's never really used for seamy purposes, is it?
It's used for big stuff. It's also they all fit under it. All three of them. This is a lot, cloak.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that it's the most special cloak that ever lived because it's one of the main, it's one of those powerful items. It's a powerful magical item. It belongs to the family from which Harry descends that have the Deathly Hallow. It's one of the Deathly Hallows.
Right.
The cloak of the brother who's hiding from death or whatever. So it's another Harry, everything Harry has is the most specialist thing ever.
Another old plot.
Yeah.
It's a little cheap, right?
Yeah.
And that's all. It's not really a cloak. It's a blanket,
it's
right?
A blanket.
Yeah. It's a blanket. I guess the invisible blanket doesn't sound as good.
Yeah. There's a lot of, and they're also, and the Marauders map. No, the Marauders map does pick it up, or it does. I don't remember. There's some of those kinds of rules, like the map that shows them where everybody is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay. And the brothers, the Weasley brothers, have it and eventually give it to Harry.
Mm-hmm.
And they use this to make sure, like, oh, Snape's in this corridor. This is how we sneak out.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't the map show that every night a man believed to be dead by the name of Peter Pettigrew is sleeping in the same bed with their brother Ron?
And it doesn't?
Pretending to be a rat, remember?
Mm. Yeah, but the map doesn't show that?
No, it does because Harry sees Peter Pettigrew on the map. And then remember, he says, oh, the map's not working. It shows the name of a dead person.
Yeah.
Mm. So I thought that might have raise some questions about what their brother's into.
They just like didn't care.
Oh, well, who knows?
You know, this isn't really on our list, but since we're talking about it, do you think Harry, like in, so Lord of the Rings has, you know, transcended multiple generations. Mm-hmm. It will continue to be
yes.
like part of the canon,
yes.
right? People are going to be reading Lord of the Rings in 100, 200 yes. years. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think Harry Potter will have similar longevity?
Absolutely. Yes.
You think so?
I absolutely do.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it's achieved escape velocity, and I think deservedly so. We're, you know, we're criticizing the elements of it, but I can criticize things I still like. I think they're great. I think they're a good thing that happened to the world that these books were written.
Yeah, absolutely.
They made
absolutely.
A whole generation of young people. They kept young people interested in reading. And that is
totally.
a good achievement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they have, I think they have merit despite some of the plot holes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the value and the message it instills is a positive one without being like very precisely political in some way. But mm-hmm. it fosters a rebelliousness of spirit against corrupt authority for good. I think Harry is a worthwhile character and hero,
mm-hmm.
and his friends are good and interesting characters.
Yep.
And it's I stand by the books. I'm happy for the books.
They're all.
I think they're a great thing. I'm glad they exist.
They, you know, spark that childlike sense of mystery and
yes.
adventure,
yes.
And discovery, right? And even the, you know, a criticism that actually never really landed very well with me was people criticize the later books for being too dark or too
mm-hmm.
political. I'm like, no, actually, I think this is like a good.
Oh, sure.
They're going from being young children.
11 to 17. They
to
grow up.
Adolescence. And that's obviously like a darker or more, you know, trying time in your life. And that's reflected in the books, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the plots all resolve themselves. It resolves itself very satisfactorily, right?
And
even if you can. Make these, you were critiquing
yeah.
foibles lovingly.
And I like how she did, each book has its own like little self-contained
mm-hmm.
mystery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I like the style in which you, honestly,
they're
it
fundamentally
is,
mystery stories, aren't they?
It's a little yeah. bit Agatha Christie reminiscent now that I've read so much Agatha Christie in the last
mm-hmm.
couple of years, where everything introduced will tie into something later. Will
yes.
be like,
mm-hmm.
like in the fourth book, they're talking about some woman who went missing and it turns out that has to do with how the Barty Crouch
yes.
guy who escaped, like it's all this convoluted mystery. And the second book is the clearest example of that, where you don't know what is attacking people, what's turning them to paralysis, and then it resolves itself with this mythical monster that's in the castle that is a snake. That's why
yes.
Harry hears it.
Yes.
Using the plumbing, that's
yeah.
where the bathroom is the entrance
mm-hmm.
to the, it all, mm-hmm. every single thing introduced helps to resolve that mystery.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's it's a fun way to read a book. And again, to introduce young people to these kinds of concepts.
Yeah, and I mean, Harry Potter is like a perfect young person's
yes.
character to a someone who's capable, but not necessarily like flawless,
yes.
plucked from obscurity to go on a grand adventure. Like that's the kind of character a child can see themselves in. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
He's specific enough that like you can describe what Harry is like. Harry is very brave. Harry is very loyal to his friends.
Mm-hmm.
Harry has contempt for following the rules.
Yeah.
But it's broad enough that you can a young person can see themselves as Harry or
mm-hmm.
see themselves as
mm-hmm.
someone who would be friends with Harry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's really well done. I think they will continue. And as
the secondary characters are always going to be sharper, right? Because
yes.
they don't have to
yes.
serve as the viewpoint character for the reader.
And frankly, I think the original movie adaptations, and this is weird to say as we're about to have another round of adaptations of the source material that I'm very skeptical of, the movie adaptations are good and have, I think, helped extend it.
You know,
I'll never like them as much as the book, but people who wouldn't have read the book know about Harry Potter from watching the movies. The movies do a competent enough job, I think, of capturing some of, they're all by different directors, so some of them are better than others, but they translate the material in a universal way well enough, in my view.
You know, I was never a huge fan of the movies, and I think it's just because I was so impressed with the books
mm-hmm.
as a... I mean, I think the first movie came out when I was like 7, maybe.
Yeah.
But I was so impressed with the books that it just like I had in my head
a
such
view
a
of
clear...
how all the...
Yeah, view of what everything should look like. And so the movies were just always bumping up against my own imagination. But that speaks to the strength of the source material,
yeah.
right? And the movies themselves, I'm sure if I went back and watched them, would be fine.
Yeah.
I don't think I've actually ever watched like the last two.
Yeah.
I think the best movie, the best adaptation was probably
the third one.
No, I disagree. That one was very controversial because it was a big change in tone and aesthetics.
It
right?
has the most unique as Alfonso Cuarón. Right. It has the most unique style.
And I was and it also this like you get the new Dumbledore.
Yeah.
I remember really not liking it as a kid. So I was a little too young for
to appreciate
emo
the...
Harry Potter mm-hmm. change in aesthetic. I couldn't quite.
I see.
You know, appreciate it. I was going to say the fourth one because I think that's the one with the best movie plot.
Oh,
right.
I didn't love the fourth. I love the fourth book. The fourth adaptation. Well, it had to leave so much out because that is, I think that's the longest book.
Is it?
Oh, but it was still good. But you like that one?
Yeah. Because I mean, you have very visual, tasks to complete, right?
Yeah.
Chase the dragon chasing you and whatever else. So, yeah, but good stuff.
Good stuff. I have no idea why they're going to adapt them again, and this seems ridiculous to me because
this was a dragon woke could not slay. You know, it tried really, really hard.
Oh, because of J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, because J.K. Rowling's comments on trans people, but then also like people started to retcon in all these reasons they actually always hated the books, always, even though of course you were obsessed with them as a child. I don't know, what is it? Oh, the houses are divided, you know, it's like...
Stupid.
Yeah, there's slavery in the books, which, I mean, yeah, sure, but that's bad. But...
I just don't know, why they have to make... I hate when they redo things that were fine the first time.
Mm.
Like, why don't they make a new Harry Potter television show about some... Flesh out the universe a little bit.
Mm.
Set it, do a prequel or a sequel, something else. Just why the thing we are. I felt this way about they did a live action version of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Oh, really?
And
you made a second
for Netflix, and it was good. But again, it adapts. It was better than that awful movie. But like, why the let it be? It was great the first time. Everyone loved it. You can use the same concept and do something. I love things that flesh out. More the problem with the Star Wars universe is so many of the additional things they do are just bad.
Yeah.
But the idea of doing other things set in the universe that can help bring clarity to some of these concepts is itself a good idea. They just are wildly tonally inconsistent and generic and poorly acted and flawed in every conceivable way. So
but other than that, Mrs. Lincoln.
But it's a good idea. Yeah. They've just executed it horrifically badly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Alas. What superpower would you want to have? If we're not even for moving, just in general.
Yeah. It's interesting because like most superpowers would actually not be valuable in real life at all.
Teleportation would be hugely valuable.
That would be great because then you could live anywhere.
You could live anywhere.
Yeah, you could, I would have a mansion in the middle of Kansas or whatever,
right?
And then I would just teleport into work.
Or even like flying, if you could fly really fast. I mean, you could still live off the grid.
Yeah, I guess. I would wonder how like fun and physically... tasking flying
I see
be, right so it's like would I be able to just like jet across the country and if I could would it be like walking for 5 hours instead of taking a plane you know what I mean
I see.
So it's like and also would I be you know would I my I maybe I would but like would my own fear of heights and speed you know be diminished by the fact that I can fly would I be at risk of running into you know what I mean so like there's a lot of risks with flying that I would just like my body would be a helicopter and helicopters are death traps
yeah
they're all motorcycles in the sky
that's a good point
yeah so I mean teleportation I think is definitely the best. I don't think you can honestly say invisibility with any sort of like honest motives, right?
With girls' gym locker room motives.
Yeah, right, exactly. If you could freeze time, I think maybe this just sounds lame, but like I think how much more productive you would be, right? I would just stop the clock and do piece
I would
number
totally
one.
Go for productivity hacks. Another one would just be never need to sleep. You'd pick up a lot of extra time to do stuff.
The
if
nights.
You never had to sleep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or just, I mean, I don't know, there's a power general against aging or,
eternal youth
or like never, I would forfeit 10 years off the end of my life to never get sick again. to never have any kind of, because you use the time more productively now. Mm. When you're an old person, an old folks home, you're run down, hopefully you have loved ones to take care of you, but your quality of life is lower. I would forfeit all that time to never be sick again now.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Increase the health span, reduce the lifespan.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. That'd be one I want. I want to shoot lightning from my fingers, but that's
just
not very...
Just for fun? Yeah.
Well, for my enemies. But
yeah.
That's not a practical one.
What about, what would you say to being in a wheelchair, but you get to read everyone's perverted thoughts?
Like Professor X?
Yeah, right. That would be the worst of them all.
That would not be good.
Yeah. You also don't... Yeah, some people might be tempted to say they want like Superman-like powers or something like that. You do not want any sort of great powers that give you great responsibility.
No.
I am helping myself with my little powers and that's it, you know?
Yes.
I don't want to have to be rescuing damsels in distress or fighting.
Or just Superman should be in a giant hamster wheel generating energy.
For everyone.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what the best use of his powers would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
But no, he's wasting his time in journalism.
Yeah, of the I don't know what the best X-Men power. I mean, Wolverine is his actual power is
invincibility.
Invulnerability to harm. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be pretty sweet. Yeah, because then you could never be injured, right?
That would be cool.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he gets hurt. It just heals. It still hurts.
Yeah. But, I mean, how, you know, in a modern life, how, I mean,
right.
maybe if it would save you if you're ever in a car crash. But other than that, like,
yeah,
I don't know. You don't stub your toe.
Right. I mean, he doesn't really he ages extremely slowly because of it, right? He's like, I think he's like 180 years old or something at the time of the, in the present.
That would
right?
be a really hard thing to know whether that would be a benefit or not psychologically.
Yeah.
You have a much longer, more, you know, lifespan, health span. But then, of course, just everyone you know dies well before you.
It's really hard to write or make characters in fiction who actually have, who are older than they're supposed to because of some kind of time travel or long life. Because it's like, well, but they were, did they changed with the culture? Their accent changed with the culture? Like Lost has a character who's revealed to be like 200 years old. And you see him in, you know, flashbacks and, you know, medieval Spain or something. And then you see him at present and he's wearing clothes out of the J. Crew catalog.
Yeah.
And it's
just has perfectly integrated.
Yeah. Antibiotics must have been really surprising to you when those came along. You know what I mean?
It's like the tweets you see sometimes where it's like, what I think Karl Marx would do in 2025. And it's like, this is the, you know, confirmation of my thesis. And it's like what Karl Marx would actually do. We landed on the moon? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, time travel would be a fun power, but...
Yes.
But you would immediately get yourself killed.
Yeah, yeah, so it depends, like...
Also, backwards time... I don't know what kind of time travel
if you could, if you knew ahead of time that, like, it wasn't one of these, like, oh, I go back in time and, you know, ruin the future or whatever.
Right. Become your own grandfather.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So long as you knew that, I think time travel would actually... that's actually the one I would
pick.
That's
what you want?
Yeah, more than even just, like, stopping time. Yes, because then you could just go back and, like... I mean, it would, yeah, you could witness history, you know?
Go back and watch time. And, like, be like, you're not really there.
Ooh,
but you
be
can
a
just,
fly on the wall of any historic
events. You're invisible to them. You're like a projection.
Yeah.
Like Bran in, although I guess he then does end up influencing in Game of Thrones, but something like that.
Yeah, go back and watch the Declaration get signed, or you know,
that's
the,
what you'd feel really good about that, right?
You know, yeah, I love America. You know, the timely. You know,
250 baby.
Yeah. Then you could just be the world's best historian. Right? You would just be an eyewitness and then come and publish these books, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although maybe no one would believe you.
You actually have to change things, right? You have to go back and give them antibiotics earlier. You have to revert World War II. You know, then it's like you have some burden to stop.
Well, that's why I said you don't want great responsibility. I don't want to have to, you know, you stop the Holocaust and all the right wingers are like, why didn't you stop Stalin?
Right.
You know, it's like, I can't do it all.
Lost, again, you never watched any of Lost, did you?
No, I watched like the first 2.5 seasons.
So I'm a big, most people who know me know I'm a big Lost guy. That was my main show. My first, my original descent into fandom was because of Lost. I wrote for the fan site in college. That's what, Lost is what got me into like artistic commentary at all. Big Lost fanatic. The later seasons do it becomes increasingly science fiction and have significant amounts of time travel going on.
Yeah, right.
And they operate under strict, nothing can be changed. Mm-hmm. So they do go back in time and they do affect what happens. But it's like, though, that was already happened.
Yeah,
they
all
don't
faded.
Alter.
Yeah.
Like, they just cause to happen things they already experienced.
Yeah.
And it's, for the most part, pretty consistent. But then they're in a place where they're like, where they injure a character as a kid who they know is alive later. And they are talking about, it's kind of fun at that point. They're like, well, we can't just let him die. And they'll be like, well, obviously, we can't choose anything. We know he doesn't die. So we are going to somehow, even if we choose not to, we're not, that's no way. He lives. We know he lives. We met him in the present.
This is why time travel plots. So it goes
so crazy off the rails.
Yeah.
Right. Because then they have to give that kid, and then it's like, but why didn't he remember you when he was an adult?
Yeah.
Like, well, they have to give him amnesia then, and they have to do all these things, and...
Maybe you'll have no sympathy for this critique, but I remember I stopped watching Lost just because I was like, there would be so much mystery presented and then never resolved. I'm just like, I'm just losing.
You didn't wait long enough. Most things, kind of. What really goes wrong, and I love Lost, so this is like Harry Potter, a little bit of criticism of something I worship.
Mm-hmm.
What really doomed them was the others. The people who live on the island who are antagonistic. Yes, but their conception, the showrunner's conception of who the others are and what they do and the threat they pose and why they're there, they have none initially, and then changes so radically that their actions from season to season don't make any sense. Like, initially, they're a very menacing presence. They're hiding in the trees. They're barefoot. They're dressed like savages.
Yeah.
They kill main character. They're a violent, scary presence.
Mm-hmm.
And then the twist, it's revealed in the third season that they're actually just normal people living in a, they have a actual civilization. They have water and electricity and plumbing. They were pretending to be backward savages. But okay, but then why were they, then their actions don't make sense. And it's like, oh, they're being instructed to do this by the antagonist, Ben, who is pretending he's doing this on behalf of a deity on the island, Jacob. It just gets more and more convoluted. The more time you spend with them, because some of these people were recruited into this line of work from off the island. I'm like, you signed up. Like, what do you think is going on now?
Yeah.
You've lived on the island for a couple years. You don't ever leave or see your family.
Mm-hmm.
Routinely, your neighbors are sent off on missions to kill people and die themselves, and you're just kind of vibing with this? Like, what do you think is... And you're not asking questions about the supernatural leader who... It doesn't hold together at that point.
Yeah.
Sounds
ridiculous,
That part is a little ridiculous. And they're... Ben, do you remember Ben from the show? The villain. He's such a great character, and but he's a charlatan, and he has rules for them. And it's like, why haven't they risen up against this person? And eventually they do when John Locke comes to try to take over the others.
Yeah.
But that part of it just does not hold up very well, the others in particular. The more time you spend with them, and because then John ends up in their midst, so then we have to see more of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, They're red shirts, like in Star Trek or whatever. They're too easily killed now all of a sudden when we couldn't even, when Jack couldn't beat one in a fist fight or, now they're easily killed. Anyway, that's a little, my anti-others rant.
Okay.
But all aspects of the show, other aspects I love.
Yeah, not a big time travel fan. You can't travel backwards in time.
Just forward.
A lot of science fiction books, the work can't be too deep, so you're not worried too much about the rules, right? Like Terminator.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not losing my mind trying to figure out the plot and consistency.
Back to the Future. I love the Back to the Future movies.
Perfect.
Those are perfect.
Yep.
Kids movies, enjoyable.
Yep.
The picture of him is vanishing as they're changing things doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares?
Yep.
It's just fun, adventure.
Yep. Most anything else that tries to get a little too deep, terrible for backward time travel.
Yes.
But a lot of science fiction books have sort of time travel. It's a bit of a trope, and I don't know if you'd call it a trope, but where it's like there's no faster than light travel, mm-hmm. and so you have the relativity differences where, mm-hmm. you know, you're on a ship and you travel what you think is 3 weeks, but turns out it's like 30 years, right? Mm. So that can be used very mm-hmm. effectively in a lot of books.
Interstellar?
Actually, I never watched Interstellar.
It has a little bit of that.
You ever read... Well, it's all the Ender's Game books. This mm-hmm. is how travel works.
Yep.
I
just read the first one.
Oh, no. Okay. I would highly recommend reading...
Speaker for the Dead. I started it. I was enjoying it. My dad loves that one. He loves all of them, but he loves Speaker for the Dead.
Yeah, they get increasingly off the rails, but I always kind of accept that with a sci-fi series. Like, yeah.
Dune goes so wildly off the rails, it's
but
insane.
By that point, you just kind of like love it, right? Yeah. You ever read The Forever War, Joe Haldeman? That's one of my favorite books, but it's basically like Vietnam in space. But this is a perfect use of the sci-fi genre, I think, is they have the time dilation effect to go fight these aliens. No one really knows why they're fighting the war, right? But so he goes off, it's 30 years, and he comes back to Earth and everything has changed and he's, alienated from society, right? Pretty good metaphor for post-traumatic stress, right?
I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just like time. I love time travel as a concept. You see how often I use it in our D&D adventures. I just love time travel. I really do. I'm a sucker for time travel.
Oh, we all have our tastes.
I like when there's a time travel episode. I like when it's just brought into things. I like time travel.
Do I like time travel? No, I
always have.
I like a bottle episode. Those are
like a
good.
Bottle episode.
Yeah,
those are good.
Because you know, the one thing that's not going to happen in a bottle episode, fucking time travel.
We just watched my better half and I the suitcase episode of Mad Men last night, which everyone holds up as the greatest on all critics' list. That's the best episode.
Which one is that?
That's the
is that
one.
Season 4.
Okay, and
I skipped that during my rewatch.
I like the episode. It's not my favorite episode, but on every critic's list, they put it number one. Hmm. It's the one where Anna Draper passes away, his pretend first wife, mm-hmm. and he's avoiding calling her to find out that that's what had happened, mm-hmm. and he makes Peggy stay late at work because he doesn't want to be alone, mm-hmm. and they're arguing over, and they go, it's a Don and Peggy episode,
okay.
and they're at the work, they're at the, mm-hmm. it's just that, it's kind of a bottle episode, and mm-hmm. that there's very little... Elsewhere, it's mostly just the two of them mm-hmm. at the office all night, and they get really mad at each other, and then they make up, and Don gets really drunk, and then he cries, and it's a good episode.
Okay.
It is pretty good.
Maybe I'll go back and watch it. Yeah, I've gotten onto season 6 in Mad Men. I didn't really watch all of season 4.
Yeah.
And I've gotten onto season 6. And I'm remembering again like why I kind of lost interest in the show. Yeah, like there's some characters I like, but I find I don't know, like season 5 had most of what I like about new mm-hmm. Mad Men, and then 6 and 7 there's just like less and less return, and then
I like
they also
throughout.
Like I'm disappointed with how a lot of character arcs end mm-hmm. in the show.
Really?
Yeah, like the Michael Ginsberg guy, that's just kind of disturbing and upsetting.
It's disturbing, but I kind of like it. I don't know, I kind of like it.
Or Ken, the one accounts man.
I love Ken's end. Oh, I identify with Ken a little bit.
Yeah,
because I like Ken.
Frustrated writer.
Yeah, because he would like to be a creative type, but he's mm-hmm. Forced into this mindless corporate job instead.
Yeah,
and eventually just embraces that even more so. Right.
I guess that's what we can expect from you as well.
Yeah.
The seasons 1 through 3 are my all-time favorite.
4 is dark on behalf of Doug. Well, he's just got divorced.
Right.
He's living by himself.
Yeah.
He's paying prostitutes to punch him in the face. He's, going through all the normal things one does
mm-hmm. when one gets divorced. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he's drinking abhorrently.
Right.
Bangs his secretary, ruins his relationship with her. Mm-hmm. It's just going from one disaster to the next.
Yeah.
So it's kind of dark, kind of hard to watch.
Yeah, but then like he's kind of off his game,
and he's off his game, right? He's not appealing to women anymore because he's just a sad, pathetic divorce man.
Yeah, but all the later seasons, he's just like he's lost some of his brilliance.
Yeah,
right? So.
I like Megan. I like his second wife, Megan, a great deal.
I enjoy their interactions much more. And again, that kind of wanes too in season 6 and 7.
Yeah.
But season 5, their relationship is great.
It is great. Zooby, zooby, zoo.
I mean, it starts it off great. And I love... I love how she just like will she's like cool and fun, and then she will just hit the fucking roof in some episodes, just like completely fly off the handle. And it's just like a little, she has like, there's a certain madness to her character I really like.
Oh, yes.
And then he as well, like, can't decide if he like likes her being fun, cool, and interesting, right, or is like, oh no, I actually like the fact that Betty just did everything I said, right? Right. Yeah.
They feel very real.
Yeah. Sure.
You see why they would end up in a relationship.
Yeah, totally. 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
And I also like the fact that, like, he respects her on a level.
He
like,
respects her. He does respect her artistically.
Yes.
A little bit more.
Betty,
he just didn't respect at all.
No. He's like, you were just a prop in my kind of fake life, right? Which makes the, I mean, that creates some good marital drama for in the first three seasons, but is kind of sad. And then also after their split, I just find Betty to be such a boring character in the later seasons too.
Oh yeah. There's a lot less going on with them. Her and Henry Francis and et cetera.
Yeah. She's just, I don't know.
Well, she's just trying to find what is going to be her thing and she never finds it. And then she dies.
Yeah.
It's very true. Very true to life.
She's just so cold and uncharismatic that, like, you know, there's characters that you don't like, but you still enjoy watching on screen.
I like her.
I don't know.
I like the old girl.
All right, we're gonna disagree about Lost. We're gonna disagree about Mad Men as well.
All right, is there anything else we should say policy wise before we wrap up here? That was a good long bout on TV and freedom. It's good. Regulation bad.
Markets.
We like
what
those.
You want, government law.
I wrote down Greta Thunberg had annoyed me for some reason, but I don't.
Did
remember
she do some AI related thing? Right.
Oh no! I almost got this. Community Notes has never let me down. They were wrong about something. Mm. There was a video of Greta Thunberg calling Donald Trump the pedophile Donald Trump. I don't know if that's a very good Greta accent. That wasn't very good.
You're normally pretty good at impressions. I'm okay. The Swede, that's
dare
a hard
you?
To do.
How okay. dare you?
It's getting a little better, yeah.
She called him a pedophile because she's, you know, buys into the Epstein delusion as well. Mm. And so I tweeted something like, now can we stop pretending the Epstein delusion is real, that, you know, that even Greta...
Did you get hit with a community note?
No, but then I saw there was a community note on that video that said this was made by AI. And I'm like, oh, I guess it is AI. It's not AI. It was actually on her Instagram page. But the community note was also AI. So AI in community notes had accused this video of being AI, but it's wrong. It was actually – so maybe in the future the AI is going to say Christian Britschke is AI, not real.
Whoa.
It's going to try to convince me that everyone's
a
fake person.
Yeah. That's what
watch out for that.
That's what they say is going to happen with AI, and I'm seeing it already with a lot of the Iran, like clips from Iran war stuff.
War slop.
War slop. Conflict slop.
Yeah. Or slop maxing.
Yeah. Slop bombing. But no, it's not that everyone, you know, gets hoodwinked into believing false things. It's that you just believe nothing at all, and that's my approach to any of the images of the war that I see, unless it's verified like 8 different times. I'm like, I just assume this is all fucking bullshit. Yeah.
That's way better than, you know, boomers on Facebook who are like, oh my, look at this video of
is this real?
Donald Trump saving kittens from a burning building. They're
okay. Well, I'm glad my cynicism is more socially productive than boomers' credulity.
I think so. Yeah. All right. We've made enough slop for today, I think.
I think we have.
We'll call it there. See you next week.